You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm John Herlig. 3 years ago, in a boatyard in Reedville, Virginia, in the United States, I came across an old, sun-bleached boat named Ave Del Mar. I learned that long before she became mine, she had sailed around the world. She's been through the Panama and Suez canals, has cruised in the sunny Mediterranean, and has rounded the infamous Cape Horn. Now she's begun a new journey with me. This is Postcards from Sea, and this is where I share stories of the people and places I encounter as Ave Del Mar and I sail the world together. Say what you want now. Time goes forward, go and catch your jet. You will find your moment. Time goes forward, stay and have a sniff. Let's dream about the future. Pretending you're wasting your spending just one more day. Welcome to Postcards from Sea. I'm John Herlig, and recording this week from Lake Sylvia in
Fort Lauderdale.
I needed help just to figure out where the heck I am. And enjoying a cold beer with my new friend Mark. And you know, if I'm enjoying a cold beer, that means I'm not on Ave Del Mar, because there is no cold beer on my boat. So, hi Mark, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining. Cheers. Firestone, right?
Yes.
Are you related to the tire people?
Not that I know of.
Well, it'd be great. They could just send you money.
Yeah. Hey, Harvey, I'm here.
So, beautiful Lake Sylvia in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where I ended up quite by accident, having left West Palm Beach just shy of a week ago, Sunday afternoon, evening, with my friend Chris, planning on sailing to Miami. And I don't want to say we failed, because I'm still alive and the boat's still floating, but we did not make Miami.
Yet.
The weather turn was right on our nose. We were just slogging through crap all night long. Our 2 to 4 foot seas were 6, 8, and 10, and 12, and it was messy. So, but to be smart, because every once in a while, why not try being smart? Chris and I dumped out of the ocean, came into Fort Lauderdale, found a gas dock, got some fuel, tipped the gas boy, went to the restaurant, had a couple of beers, managed to stay awake through lunch. Chris went back to West Palm, and I came to anchor, and that's how I met Mark here. Although, actually, before I got anchored in Lake Sylvia, I was anchored by the mooring field, just north of here. Although, according to the police, I was anchored in a mooring field, and they were not very happy with me. So,
lots of police around here.
Oh, dear Christ. And none of them smile. This is not a very happy crew. If there are any Fort Lauderdale Maritime police listening, put some Prozac in that company Coke fountain. That really, it's, you know, we're all smiling and cooperating. At least most of us are. Worry about the drunken assholes. Anyway, I digress. So I anchored what I thought was near a mooring field until they came by and knocked on my hull and said, "You're anchored in a mooring field. Gotta move." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Yes, sir. Right away, sir." And I moved and I came down in here and anchored right by Mark. Not because, but it ain't bad, the fact that Mark is on a Gozzard. In 1991, that's the first time I have not screwed up
the date.
Well, I can't read. I'm a sailor. A 1991 Gozzard 36.
36,
right?
Yeah.
Which you've owned for how long?
3 years.
3 years.
And it's a great boat. And I think it was designed to do exactly what I'm doing, cruising down the coast on my way to the islands.
That is an awesome thing, and drinking cold beer with new friends.
Yes.
Yeah, I pulled up and anchored. I actually had to anchor in here twice. I dropped it the first time. You single hand, right?
Yes. Yep.
So, sailing solo. But you have an electric windlass?
Yes.
So you deploy it while you're still in the cockpit?
No.
You have to go forward and step on the little button.
I can do either or, but I prefer to be up there with the anchor.
Fancy pants. just kidding. So sometimes, at least for me, I've got it all. Yeah. There he is. I see the button,
yeah,
which he doesn't use. hats off to you. But sometimes, at least for me, I pull up, got my trajectory, I'm going to go forward. I like to drop it either under sail or at least while I've still got momentum and against the current, or no, with the current. So my nose is actually coming with the current. Mm-hmm. So the anchor will set and grab and the boat will swing around. And then I know I'm, if not fully set, at least I know she's grabbed.
Got a bite.
Yeah, so sometimes I have it all lined up with my funky little tiller steering. And I've got a spot in mind. I can see it in my mind's eye out on the water. Get it all lined up, looking cool, walking forward nice and calm. By the time I get to the front of the boat, she's veered off course. She's going north, going south. Sometimes I drop anyway and it works out. And sometimes I go, oops, and I go back.
When I saw you anchor the second time, I actually said, well, it looks like that guy knows what he's doing.
I'll drink to that. Thanks.
Because I've seen lots around here who don't. So it looked like you knew what you were about. And that was good.
Yeah.
Especially when you're next to me.
I love my boat to pieces, but man, there are a few vessels out on the water that I think are prettier than Gossard's. In love with this boat for many, many years. Not that I'm not still, but you know, I have a boat. But every single year in the Annapolis Boat Show, I would make sure I went on that Gossard and sit down, talk to, I guess it's Mike now, right?
Mike is the son, yeah.
Yeah.
He took over, Ted passed away.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so Mike was always sitting on that boat, and I'd go in and chat with Mike.
He's great. I emailed him yesterday about the deck.
Right.
Within a half hour, I got an email back, and he answered my question. And
that.
He's very client-friendly. And I never have bought anything from him, actually.
but he's... Indirectly, you did.
Yeah.
Because you bought one of his boats.
Absolutely. He knows the boat well, and he... I was wondering about if the deck was cored or
right.
if it was solid, where I want to put in a piece of hardware. And he knew just what was going on. But he's... my last boat was very difficult to get customer information, so...
Right. What kind of boat was your last boat?
It was a Pacific Sea Craft.
Okay.
And now what I hear, there's new owners, and the new owners, I guess, are customer friendly and very helpful.
Well, that's
compared
nice.
To be
right.
What the old owners were
what,
all
what
about.
What size them. Was the Pacific Sea Craft?
It was a 20.
A 20?
Flick of 20.
Oh.
Yeah, great little boat.
That's
and
awesome.
Actually, there was one right where you replaced the Flicker that was here, the anchor, you took their spot.
did they anchor well also?
Yeah, he did pretty well, young guy, and he did well, and he actually went home for Christmas, and I watched the boat for him.
Nice.
So I went to surprise his mom.
And, where was home for him?
North Carolina.
All right.
So he took the train.
Oof.
And I took him into shore, and he knew his Flicker was in a flick of hands. So, so he was happy.
I don't know if that makes sense, but I know what you mean.
Yeah. I had the Flicker for 19 years, so
oh,
I really knew the boat real well.
That's awesome. So, but your Gossard. There's always been a few things about the Gossard that just really appealed to me. That clipper bow, if that's what you want to call it, is just, it's item of legend, you know? It is...
Well, it's a classic line,
it
that's
is
for sure.
Classic
Some people
line.
Don't like it, actually, but most people that appreciate the line of a sailboat, I mean, it just adds some nice grace to it.
As,
it's nice to have the bowsprit.
As my kids and I like to occasionally say, your opinion is wrong if you don't like it.
I like that one.
Well, you know, we're a headstrong bunch. But it's got those spectacular lines, especially on the bow, but beautiful everywhere. But I'm going to ask you this, in your words, not mine. The interior below deck on your boat, I think, is one of the most unique sailboat interiors that I've ever been on. And I would love to hear your opinion of it or your description of it, just quick. You don't have to give a detailed tour of the whole thing. But was that a part of your reason for liking the boat, or just if it had been a traditional
Absolutely.
Layout,
no,
you
no,
wouldn't have cared?
The layout is amazing. He really thought about every aspect of the detail of how he laid things out. Basically, a very big, open concept
right.
that can be divided off, if which I hardly ever do, but you can...
if somebody actually comes to visit.
I have visitors, but even when I have visitors, we rarely ever... You can make
chop it up.
Two private statements.
Sure.
And it doesn't seem necessary to me,
right.
but there can be times where if I wanted to have the captain's quarters and charter out
right.
the forward berth,
sure.
You definitely want to do that.
And where do you sleep? Where's your quarters?
I sleep in the V berth.
Okay, forward.
Forward.
Which is what, and that's, to me, the singularly most unique thing about the design interior of the Gozzard is the V berth, which isn't, well, it is a berth. I was going to say it isn't really a berth. It's much more of a berth than
forward
most
room.
So this would be, it's the convertible living room. It's the right. salon of your boat. So it's in its unmade state. It's basically a salon with V-shaped settees.
Yes.
And there's some of these
together.
Yeah, some of these even have like a little pedestal table that'll go between them that I've seen.
I actually have one that's a portable one.
Yeah.
That I have down there.
But then
that
these
I use some occasionally.
These two wings of the V, if that would be the right phrase, sort
yeah.
of hinge together
and form a queen size bed
a queen
in about 30 seconds.
Walk around.
Yeah.
You should, if you ever want to entertain yourself, come over when I'm trying to make my bed, because it's like putting a bow tie on a bullfrog. It's just, I'm not the tallest guy in the world, and, you know, I don't have the smallest V-berth, but it's just ridiculous. Trying
yeah.
to get in under and the narrows and get the,
yeah.
L, it's in your, sitting on top of the very mattress that you're trying to get sheets on or blankets on
yeah.
or off of. And
well, the quarter berth on this boat is actually king size, but, and the first 2 weeks I had the boat, that when I was staying on it, I slept back there.
Right.
I said, geez, I ought to try the front. I never went back. But,
never.
But also, in due fairness, all the front cushions and foam have been replaced, and the ones in the quarter berth are original.
Right.
And I think if that had new foam in it...
A little superior up front right now.
Yeah, my old boat, I had new foam put in, and... It was just a world of sleeping difference. The foam gets tired.
Yeah, without a doubt. Abe's full of tired foam.
Yeah.
But that's okay. It works. I was going to say, my friends and I used to refer to the aft stateroom on their boat as the afterbirth. That's where I slept.
Yeah.
This is Postcards from Sea. I'm John Herling, chatting with my new friend Mark Firestone aboard his Gozzard 36. I know I'm staring right at the plate and I still can't remember what the boat is.
Serafina.
Yeah. I was going to mention that earlier and forgot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just a name. Am I being ignorant? Does Serafina mean anything?
Somebody just told me. It
put
means
you on
several
the spot.
Things. I never remember. But somebody, his friend that
just
I
make
met.
Something up.
it
means.
It was actually. I think it was something. I wrote it down, but I can't remember.
Mark is now shuffling through papers while sitting in his captain's seat out here in the cockpit, wondering where he desperately scribbled what Serafina allegedly means.
One of the things that it means.
Which is probably something that some other drunk sailor told him when they were passing by. It's probably wrong anyway. So, well, I'll let him look for that. So, I'm here. I have no idea what day or date it is. It's sometime, I guess it's January of 2017, some day or another.
Saturday.
It's a Saturday. Don't ask me what the number is. Sure, whatever you say.
Maybe.
Well, and I'm trying to get to the damned Bahamas, and you're trying to get to the damned Bahamas,
yes.
And nobody's in the damned Bahamas. So I was initially planning on trying to jump.
I've never been to the Bahamas in my life, and I've tried several times.
Well, we're going to get you there, buddy.
this will be my year.
I wanted to hop off from Miami and was trying to do the impossible thing of getting a weather window that would get me south from West Palm to Miami. And then a weather window that would get you east from Miami to the Bahamas. And I seem to sort of be 0 for 2 right now.
Well, you're a pipe dreamer, then.
Well, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
So as I sit here, I would be willing to go east to the Bahamas from here, Fort Lauderdale. I would also still be willing to go down to Miami. I would even be willing to, if I get bored enough and I want to go, take the Intracoastal and the last 10 trillion bridges, whatever the number is, between here and Miami. I'd rather go outside. And this is something that you had a boat before this boat. You've been sailing a long time. I've been around boats, but not really sailing most of my life. This is newer for me. It's just hard to explain to people who haven't tried to do it how weirdly elusive those weather windows are, and how it's not because you want a cushy ride. When the weather's against you, you really can't responsibly do it.
The Gulf Stream goes north at 2.5-3 knots, and when you have a northerly wind, it picks the waves up, and I've heard it described as elephant waves. It looks like a herd of elephants.
Yes.
And you don't want to, you know, people get out there and you really get beat up.
Yeah.
And it's way better to go when you get the window.
Right.
You also need, like last year on the way back when I had, I tried for several months last year.
Way back from Florida to the north, is that what you mean?
I did the same trip.
You don't mean all the way back from the Bahamas, because you already told me you've never been there.
Right. I tried to do this trip. I did this trip last year trying to go to the Bahamas, and it was an El Nino winter, and it was just blowing out of the north for months and months and months. And I missed a couple windows.
Right.
But also, once you just get across the Gulf Stream, you need time to get across the banks over there.
Yep.
And it just wasn't happening.
Right.
I got stuck in Key West last winter for 7 weeks.
You know, there are worse things than that, I suppose, right?
But on the way back, I came to Lake Silvio with a friend of mine who's a delivery captain, and we were going to go over to the West End from here.
Right.
And
which would be, if you don't know, the very northern part of
the Abacos.
Yeah. So, and one of your northernmost Bahamian,
which is maybe 65 or 68 miles from here, roughly.
Right.
And we had a small window to do it, but then there was a front coming in.
Right.
And we realized we're just going to be stuck in the West End when we got there.
Sure.
And we had a time issue then. So we could have waited there for a few days, gotten across the bank. Then we'd have to turn around and come back across the bank and look for a window to get him back over here.
Right.
So we decided it wasn't worth it.
And that really is sort of it in a nutshell. Like when you talk about the Gulf Stream getting churned up, or any other body of water for that matter, it's not just comfortable, flattish, smooth sailing versus, oh, it's bouncy.
Yeah.
It's sort of an all-defeating thing when the water is that rough, because you can't sit without effort, you can't stand without effort. Every bit of the boat is requiring a phenomenal amount of energy to maintain.
Yeah.
The sails are under
stress.
You're
out there, you're out there.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not just, ooh, I want the more comfortable one. It's really technically doable versus really marginally, at best, doable.
Yeah.
And that's
and I
that's
think
a rough
both
thing.
Of our boats are sound at seaworthy blue water type boats, and the boat would do it, but it doesn't make sense why, you know.
And
prudent thing is to do it when we have all this weather information. Use it.
Yeah.
In the meantime, enjoy what you got.
Enjoy what you got, which I've been doing. So it's funny. I was up at 6:30 this morning to listen to Chris Parker. Not a damned word. I think you said you don't have an SSB.
Right.
These things are pure witchcraft.
Oh.
I half the time that I listen to Chris Parker, I can hear Chris Parker, and he'll be answering people that I can't hear, answering questions that I can't hear.
Whoa.
I turn it on this morning at 6:30. All I can hear is the people asking Chris Parker questions. I don't even know he's there.
Oh.
It's like I'm getting the left stereo feed, but not the right, or the right and not the left. And it's just, it's got to do with the atmosphere and propagation and all these things. But I tell you...
Well, there was a big front coming in. I don't know...
Let's blame that.
I was up at 5.
Right.
And all I could see was lightning strikes and some thunder offshore.
Right.
And so I totally closed my boat all up and went back into the rack. And, of course, I was prepared so it didn't rain.
Right, yeah, yeah. If you'd left those hatches open, it would have poured.
And, but we just had our squall about an hour ago.
Indeed we did. Yeah. So I've got to take a quick break. We'll go take care of that business, and when we come back, we'll talk about that squall and making dinghy runs for water and about what I like to call analysis paralysis. We'll be back in a second.
Our aim at Street Invest is to put a trustworthy adult into the lives of street children so that they can support them in creating the most positive paths for their lives in the future. We work around the world, working on the street with the children where they are. For such a large group of children, the amount of funding available is tiny. Really, the funding that keeps organisations like Street Invest going comes from individual donors. Street children are the most abused, neglected, violated children, yet they are also the most resourceful, responsive and resilient children that we could have the honour of working with.
For more information or to make a donation, visit streetinvest.org.
Cat coming in behind you there.
And we are back from that break. I was just laughing at the back of Mark's shirt, which is from a bar. Where's the bar?
In Block Island, Rhode Island.
Block Island, Rhode Island. It's called Mahogany Shoals.
Yeah.
And on the back of the shirt it says... the bar you've been practicing for. does that mean lawyers are there getting drunk with sailors?
Well, it's actually...
Wait, who drinks more, lawyers or sailors? I think sailors.
I would go with the sailors, yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's just a small little shed of a bar.
That's the best.
Yeah, and once a week they have like an Irish guy come in and he does like sea shanties and it gets the whole place rolling. Really great.
That's awesome. I don't know a single sea shanty. I'm sorry.
Well, I don't either, but it's fun when you're there.
With enough Guinness,
yeah,
we know them all.
Yeah.
So Mark and I went buzzing across Fort Lauderdale the other day. In his dinghy, because he's got an outboard and I don't.
Mm-hmm.
And we just went to get water, which was, there's this phenomenal little thing. You cut through these canals. There's a canal on the other side of the Intracoastal that has a little public dock where you can't leave your boat.
You have to go under the bridge.
We'll get to the bridge part. And at this dock, you pull up, tie off, drop off your trash. If you have a holding tank, you can pump out the boat. You can get water, and then you got to get on your merry way and get the heck out of the way.
Yeah.
So this involves leaving Lake Sylvia on whatever sort of dinghy you're on, going under a bridge, which is low.
At high tide, it's very low. Yeah.
At high tide, could you still get under that bridge that we went under?
You have to lay in the dinghy. literally.
You have to literally lay flat in the dinghy.
This one over here, actually got the... Last year, we tried it at high tide, and we got the pontoon stuck.
The dinghy itself got stuck between the water and the bridge.
Yeah.
That's a low bridge.
So I don't use that one, except for I did go under it today at low tide going over there.
Right.
And the tide was coming in on the way back. I came through the second bridge. I think there's four.
Yeah.
And depending on where you're going and stuff, we went up to the New River in the dinghy expedition for about 30, 40 minutes to the... And the third one, you have to actually go under two bridges to get out of the ICW.
I will not be sailing my dinghy through any of those little waterways. It's like a little grid of canals that sort of connect everything. So you go through this canal, you get to the end, then you're at the Intracoastal Waterway, which you have to dart across.
Right by the 17th Street Bridge.
Indeed, by the 17th Street Bridge. And is that a Hilton? That hotel that looks like a spaceship.
Well, I actually, that's very interesting.
Something
I named
66.
That's Pier 66.
Okay.
And the Hilton's on the other side.
Oh,
I forget
all right.
what this one is. I'll
okay.
think of it in
yeah,
a minute.
Whatever.
But if you look at it at night, the shape and the blue lights.
Yeah.
As soon as I say it, from anybody from our timeline.
Okay.
I call it the Jetsons.
It is.
It is the Jetsons.
Oh,
place.
Nuts! It is the Jetsons.
And there's a. I don't know if you've noticed it at night. There's a exterior elevator.
Yes, I've seen the
elevator. The top where the blue
uh-huh,
is
uh-huh.
was a restaurant. It's
right.
closed now, but
right.
they're working on it or something. Sometimes you see the elevator going
used
up
to be,
and down.
It was probably one of those restaurants that spins around.
But we were having a little party a couple weeks ago, and I mentioned that the Jetsons. Everybody started singing the Jetsons song.
Yeah, well, we'll skip that.
We'll skip
but
that,
it sure
but
didn't go through my head.
We did have the. You know, we had to remember all their names and all that, but
Can we do that? George, Judy.
Oh, no, no, now you did it.
Elroy.
Okay.
And Jane.
Very good.
Thank you. I don't remember, and Rosie the maid.
Wow, you were great.
And the dog was Astro.
Yeah.
And he worked for Spacely Sprockets.
Wow. Wow, you are...
And
I
wasn't even
want to play Trivial Pursuits against you.
I wasn't even really a TV kid. I can't believe I just did that.
Wow,
I must have been.
But I mean, that was etched, and I'm sure the architect watched the Jetsons. You know, because when you see that lit up at night,
or dropped acid, one or the other,
yeah.
maybe both. So you get to the end of this canal when you're going over to get water with your new buddy Mark, who's willing to take you there because he has a boat with a motor, and you have to row.
No problem. Yeah.
And when you get to the end, this would be sort of like dashing across an 8-lane highway on foot in rush hour. Does that sound about right?
With waves.
With waves and no stripes on the pavement and no traffic lights.
Yeah.
And all the cops aren't out. The cops don't apparently give a rat's ass about...
Last year when I was approaching the fuel dock after waiting almost an hour for my turn, it was very busy.
Uh-huh.
I was just making my approach, single-handing this big boat, and a cop came out of there and cut me off at the bow.
Oh, nice.
As I approached the dock. It didn't even look my way.
Well,
that's how bad it is over there.
This is... I will say this, for all my... I don't have any friends who are maritime police, but for all my buddies who are police and sheriff's department, I would think that if... My last job before I left society to get on my boat and sail away, I was the GM of a big bar in Washington, D.C. You want to talk about being one cranky bastard.
Mm-hmm.
As the 20-somethings, and I have no ill will towards 20-somethings, just poured in by the hundreds, where we gave them alcohol and they all acted like idiots, it just sort of eroded whatever minuscule amount of patience I might have had to begin with. And you get halfway through a Friday or Saturday night at that bar, and it was just really hard to be as nice as I wanted to be. And I have to think that being a cop on the water in Fort Lauderdale has to be one of the most aggravating...
There's an awful lot of boats around here, and there's an awful lot of knuckleheads.
There's a lot of knuckleheads, there's a lot... I mean, it's just... There was, okay, here's a mini digression for you. There was a boat party yesterday, right here in our little Lake Sylvia, on this powerboat. Well, only one that I really recall. The one.
Yeah, the big one.
The big one.
Yeah.
If I were filming a movie or a TV show, and I was going to have a South Florida, Fort Lauderdale boat party, and it looked exactly like that boat party looked yesterday... And I were watching it on TV when my movie came on, I would have rolled my eyes and said, that is so over the top. It's not what they really do. You're really just, you know, you're caricaturizing the entire thing. No, this was maybe a dozen and a half kids.
Yeah.
I want to say early 20s, maybe.
Yeah.
It's just all young, pretty, and skinny.
Yeah.
A gazillion of them on this big boat with a smaller boat and the paddle boards, and they're skiing and they're jumping off the boat. they're drinking from the beer bong on the foredeck.
Yeah.
They've got the most atrocious club music playing the entire. It really did look like a scene from a bad TV show. I couldn't believe it was real.
And I really think they're all the rich kids that border. I mean, are all around this lake are what I call McMansions around here, and I think they're the affluent kids that come out here and party.
I didn't know there was actually anybody in any of these houses.
There's been a few. There was a real big party in the big one here last week, and I would say there's probably only 10% occupancy around here or something like that.
Do you think you have to actually go to school to learn how to throw a party like that, or is it just something that's in your blood if you live here?
Yeah, it's some kind of...
in your blood.
In your blood.
Yeah. All right, so you're trying to get on to the Bahamas. What's your plan from here? Best laid plans
best
of mice
laid,
and men, you know.
I'm hoping to leave this Thursday.
Okay.
When my friends come back, we're going to buddy boat down into the Keys. I may or may not have crew.
Right.
And it doesn't really matter to me if I if I have crew. I'm fine to
you gonna
single
go
hand.
Inside?
I'll go outside if the weather... allows.
Okay.
I much prefer to go outside from here.
What can you clear? How high is your mast?
I can clear the bridge there. I believe the bridge is 55 or 56 feet.
Yeah, I was thinking
and
54
I'm
or
52.
Plenty of room.
I went through it last year and I said, well, the math works. Everybody's waiting. And I did it and I didn't hear anything hit.
Nothing went thud. So let me tell you this. I got a buddy named Jan who's from... the Netherlands, who sails on a Swan. I met him up in West Palm Beach. Great older Dutch guy. Hasn't circumnavigated, but has done a great number of cross-Atlantic races, Heineken Regatta and all this stuff. And last time he pulled into West Palm Beach, there was no mast on his boat.
Ooh.
He was going under some bridge. I don't know what bridge. I don't know what he cleared, but that's a Swan. I forget. I don't want to say the wrong number, but Swan... 40-something. It's a lot of boat. Had a lot of mass. He was going under a fixed bridge that he had clearance to get under, but while he was under the bridge, a powerboat came zooming past him, waked his mast right into the bridge, broke off the top of the mast, and nobody got the name of the powerboat.
Oh.
Yeah, he was not a happy camper.
Oh, that's awful.
So that's not to make you paranoid. I'm just saying, when you go through your bridge, do a quick 360 for boats that cause wakes before you go under.
2 or 3 years ago, I went across to Okeechobee, and on the east side of, there's a fixed bridge at 49 feet on the east side of Lake Okeechobee.
All right.
And I was with my, my buddy's motor sailor. And we measured his mast 2 or 3 times at 48.8. So he said, hey, Mark, you get on the deck, see how... And he's kind of inching. It's not like you can tell.
Right,
you know?
Yeah, because you're looking
like,
up at it.
Yeah, it looks great. You know? And we heard his antenna going tink, 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 and we made it.
Well, that's like a curb feeler. That's perfect.
Yeah, yes.
Tink, but, tink, tink, tink is okay.
Yeah. Crunch,
clunk,
crunch,
yeah.
Crunch.
That definitely not okay. All right, so inside or outside. And there is, as Mark's pointing out now, yet another gigundous catamaran coming through.
There's
I always
a lot
think
of
they
cats in here this week.
They look like horseshoe crabs to me.
Yeah.
That's not a negative. I'm just saying that the hotel reminds you of the Jetsons.
Yeah.
And those catamarans remind me of horseshoe crabs.
Okay.
So, but that's just me. So you're going to get down to the Keys.
Yeah.
Buddy boat with your friends on the Catalina who are now.
Well,
they're
not going to the Bahamas this year. They have been.
Are they going to go to the Keys with you?
They're going to go to the Keys and their kids are coming in, so they want to go to Key West.
Okay.
And I have another buddy boat that I met last year and they want to cross with me. They just contacted me today. And they're in Marathon.
Okay.
So depending on the weather and the crew, either I'll go down to like Key Biscayne to like No Name Harbor, and I could cross right over less than 50 miles to the Berries.
Right.
To Bimini.
To Bimini.
To Bimini, excuse me. But I'll probably go down to Marathon and meet up with them, and we'll get all prepared, and we'll wait for a weather window, and at least the two boats will cross at the same time.
What's the name of that other boat?
Katie did.
Katie did?
Yes.
No, she did not.
Well, it's kind of funny. When I was buddy boating with them last year, we were going through all these bridges, and one of the bridge tenders, we cleared the bridge, and they said, "Excuse me, ma'am, can you tell me what Katie did?" And me and my buddy who was on the boat, we were listening because she wouldn't tell us, and then she starts laughing and just said, "Well, that's for me to know." So there's for you, Kate.
It's good that Katie's secrets are still secrets.
Yeah.
So I might run into you in the Bahamas again.
Hopefully, yes.
Should be awesome.
Yeah.
I would offer, I'll buy you a cold beer if we can make it to land.
Yeah.
Or you can come visit me and I'll give you warm whiskey.
The Kalik.
Yeah. Oh, I've gotten in some trouble on Kalik before.
Yeah, I've tried them.
Yeah.
And
That is the Kalik Gold. It's like 7%.
Oh, yeah.
That shit will knock you on your butt.
Okay.
Or off of a kayak. It's a story for another episode, but apparently it is possible while blackout level inebriated to climb back onto a kayak in the Intracoastal Waterway.
Oh, and find your vessel.
And find your vessel. The very few times, because I'm always responsible, that I've ever dinghied myself home while under the influence. It's always the next morning I wake up and all I can think is, oh, please God, let me still have a dinghy. And I kind of poke my head out to see if John under the influence was together enough to actually tie the dinghy. I haven't lost a dinghy yet. Has your dinghy ever drifted away on you from the boat?
Yes, and I was just going to say, I think you need more practice.
I just a week or two ago suffered my first ever dinghy wandering incident, which was I'm really careful. I always tire off with two lines when I tire to the boat, even if I don't hoist her. I've got the cradle where I can hoist her up, but if I'm not hoisting her, I always tire off with two lines because I'm quite honestly just freaking paranoid about losing the boat. I've already had one stolen. I don't need another one to drift away.
Yeah, it's our cars.
Yeah, and that's a long swim, and I'm not really that buoyant. I had pulled up to my boat in West Palm just a few weeks ago. I'd been ashore, just rowed back out to the boat from the dock. You could throw an apple farther than I had to row. Got out there and just tied her off and hopped on the boat and was doing whatever I was doing. About 10 minutes later, I hear this little outboard, and a dinghy comes up, and I poke my head out, and I see these guys from a boat nearby, and they said, "Hey, we've got your dinghy if you want it back." And I was like, oh, my God.
Wow.
I'm now in
Very
the club.
Nice. Yeah.
And it's the first time I ever grounded my boat. I've only grounded her one time hard, and I called. I still had towboat. U.S.
Well, we all do it.
at that time, and I called, and he was very nice, but I will say not particularly sympathetic. Mm-hmm. And I was seriously convinced that I had just ruined my boat. It was never going to float again. It was going to sink. Water was just going to be coming in over the sides. And
Did you hit something hard, or was it just a hard...
It was just like hard-packed sand, but basically...
That's okay.
Easy for you to say now.
I've done it.
This was at the end of a very long day on the ICW. I'd done 10 or 12 hours. I was just exhausted. And quite frankly, just missed a contour line. There's one marker that's way out. And I was just going into the mouth of a river where I'd marked my anchorage for the night. Yeah. And there is just a little shoaling that goes... right across the front of the river. It's just, it's like a median strip. Mm-hmm. And the water goes from 12 or 15 feet to like 3 in space of about 10 feet.
I did the same thing with my Flicker one time, and it was getting dark, and I threw the anchor out, and I could see half the shank sticking out. I said, "Well, I guess that ought to hold it."
That's not a lot of water.
I know.
Somebody was recently telling me about navigating in fog, and a trick they learned up on the Great Lakes, they call it potato navigation. I was like, what in God's name is potato navigation?
I never heard that one.
I said, well, you send one of your crew members up to the bow of the boat with a sack of potatoes. Mm-hmm. About every minute, they throw a potato forward as hard as they can. If you hear a splash, you keep going. And if you don't hear a splash, yeah, you come hard about and yeah, make some plans.
Yeah.
So, yeah, potato navigation. Yeah. Sounds like you were sort of doing anchor navigation.
I was on my friend's Pearson years ago, and we were tacking through the fog. It's weird to have wind and fog, but mm-hmm, that's happened to me a few times. And we're on, well, I think, a starboard tack, and trying to get the most out of it in this channel. And all of a sudden the fog lifted, and I looked up, and all I could see was a car going down the street. And I said, tack! literally, like, from here to that boat, you know, it's like, oh, we better tack. And we didn't. We didn't.
You didn't hit anything. We didn't ground.
We didn't ground. Nice. We tacked out of there. And I was like, and we went back into the fog where it was safe.
Oh my God, that's funny. I'll wrap up with this. Very first time I left Annapolis to come south, I had my son with me on a journey that didn't go very far the first day because of fog and the second day because my transmission went out. But we were leaving the first day and we fueled up and we were pulling out of Back Creek out into the Severn River to go out into the Chesapeake to come down, and it was foggy as all get up. And I was going along. I have radar. Mm-hmm. My radar at that point wasn't hooked up, and I had never used it. So we were coming out, and I was kind of looking, trying to get a feel for it. I'd sailed in and out of there many times, so I wasn't particularly worried about the landscape, the water, the depth, and all that. Mm-hmm. But I was trying to figure out if at the mouth of the river the fog sort of, you know, abated, and there was some sailing ahead of us, or if it was just pea soup. So I was inching my way along. We're not under sail yet. We're just motoring. And kind of made it to the mouth of the river. And I'm slowing down and looking around. And I said, I don't know about this. And my son was sitting there next to me. And he goes, is that a boat? And all I could think, which I think I said out loud to him at the time, was when you get to the point where you actually utter the phrase, is that a boat?
Yeah,
it's time to turn around and get the heck out of there.
Absolutely.
And drop the hook somewhere. So anyway, I've prattled on long enough. Mark Firestone of Serafina, your beautiful gossard, thank you for joining in.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thanks for the cold beer. It's a special treat. I hope that our paths cross in the Bahamas or elsewhere. Who knows? Maybe you'll get a fire lit under your ass and you'll keep going instead of coming back.
Well, I, you never know. You're not the first one to say that.
I'll see you in Grenada.
Yeah.
But that will wrap up this episode. So thank you again, Mark. Thank you, Mike McDowell and Boat Radio, for hosting the show. Thank you to D Imperfection for our theme song, Welcome to Neverland. And as always, thank everyone who listens and follows along. You guys are really what makes it worthwhile. You can find me, and well, really, you can find Ave, the boat, and her adventures on Facebook, facebook.com/sailing.ave. And she's also on Instagram at sailing.ave. So I'll be back in a couple of weeks with a new show, maybe, if we're lucky, from the Bahamas. Until then, I love you all. Be well and be happy.
for you. You've got no time to